Remembering.
Tonight it is my great pleasure to welcome, for the first time to Many Rivers Books and Tea, our speaker for the evening, Sky Nelson, physicist and songwriter. Right there, you get a sense of the uniqueness of this gentleman and his work in that concatenation. And Stuart and I had the great pleasure of speaking with him on our radio show, The Mystical Positivist, a number of months ago, and we were excited to have him come and speak to us here at Many Rivers tonight. He's a software developer and physics educator with a BA in physics from UC Berkeley.
Also a high school teacher.
Also a high school teacher. High school teacher, yay! Go high school teachers. He has 9 years of physics and math teaching experience at various institutions, and including high schools, and but not only high schools. And his papers have appeared in the conference proceedings for the American Association for the Advancement of Science and the Journal for Scientific Exploration. He has presented his work connecting physics and synchronicity at a variety of conferences, including towards the Science of Consciousness, Science and Non-Duality Conference, and the AAAS meetings. And I could keep going on. He is a very interesting and accomplished man, and we are delighted to welcome him to Many Rivers. Please join me in welcoming Sky Nelson.
Hey there, buddy. What's that you say? You're feeling down today. There are so many things in this world you would like to change. Well, I don't have no sad song to sing for you today. I've left them all behind. I've left them all behind. Oh, I've left them all behind. I've got no sad songs today. Turn off the television. I ignore the news. There ain't no reason a man like me should sing the blues. Spilling sadness everywhere, but that's all in our minds. I've left that all behind. Left that all behind. Oh, I've left that all behind. I've got no sad songs today. I won't sing no, I won't sing no, I won't sing no sad songs. I won't sing no, I won't sing no, I won't sing no sad songs. I won't sing no, I won't sing no, I won't sing no. I've left them all behind. I've got no sad songs today. I won't sing no, won't sing no, I won't sing no sad songs. I won't sing no, I won't sing no, I won't sing no sad songs. I won't sing no, I won't sing no, I won't sing no sad songs. I've left them all behind. I've got no.
Welcome. It's a great pleasure to be here with you. And a lot of familiar faces and some new faces. And thank you for coming to listen and participate tonight. So we're here to talk about synchronicity. We're here to talk about unexpected opportunities, being in the right place at the right time. How come you're interested in synchronicity?
Because it happens.
Because it happens.
It's magic.
It's magic. Synchronicity, I'm going to define as a meaningful coincidence, a
convolution of events or a coming together of events that have some meaning for you that seems greater than chance,
greater than randomness. Why else are you interested in synchronicity?
It's building on your dreams, right? You keep doing things that lead you towards a certain direction and help you get there.
Do you mean dreams metaphorically or dreams actually in your dreams? Because Jung talked a lot about dreams.
No, I don't mean dreams at all.
But you mean dreams sort of our vision for our life.
Yeah.
Hopes. Yeah, our hopes and dreams. And so it's a way of watching our hopes and dreams become manifest in the world around us.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, wonderful.
Preparing yourself through education or just things we choose to do.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully when the opportunity comes along, we're ready for it.
Ah, there's a good phrase. When the opportunity comes along, you're ready for it. Preparing yourself for synchronicity. So is synchronicity something you can prepare yourself for?
Just being open.
I see some no's and some yeses.
Being open. Yeah. And knowing that once you make a decision to go a certain way, all kinds of things can happen to help you, to assist you to go forward.
There's a great quote that you may be probably familiar with, often misattributed to Goethe, but it's William Thomson Hutchinson? William Hutchinson, I think. He was an Antarctic he was an explorer of wild places. And he wrote a great quote about the minute we step forward with commitment into what we're planning to do, all manner of unforeseen assistance comes to us.
True.
And he was not a particularly spiritual person that I know of. I don't know that he was a Buddhist or metaphysical Christian or anything in particular, but he realized this from the travels that he took. They took this trip, I think it was the Himalayas. I think he was a Himalayan explorer. And it was like they were committed to doing it, and the minute they began taking steps on that direction, all manner of unforeseen assistance appeared to help them on their path. And so I think part of the message that I bring on this is that it's not simply a spiritual experience, although many of us who study spiritual texts and follow that kind of path would agree right away that synchronicity is part of the world, but it's actually something that can be seen in a very without that lens. So it's a very broad spectrum. It can appeal to a broad spectrum of people and a broad spectrum of languages and modalities. So you'll actually notice I didn't use the word synchronicity in my title, and that's actually for that reason, because I do speak to a broad range of people, and I try and use language that's very generic in a way and can reach across any kind of boundaries. So Stuart's going to help me out tonight. We're not going to cover all of this, but so I have the overview of the why coincidences. Why is it important to talk about coincidences? And we did just talk about that a little bit. We're going to talk a little bit about quantum mechanics and the weirdness of quantum mechanics. That's QM. And we're going to talk about timelessness and a process I call retroactive event determination, or RED. And then that's going to lead into a concept called relationality. And these three right here, this is where the physics comes in. This is the research that I've been doing. And then we're going to take it from the actual nuts and bolts and the intellectual side and look at how do we make more out of synchronicity, or how do we thrive with the unknown. I really like that phrase for what a lot of you were saying about being prepared in some sense, making room for the unexpected. I have a website called Expecting Synchronicity, and it's very particularly not predicting synchronicity, because I've never found that I can ever predict when synchronicity will happen. Same for you?
Yeah, that's kind of like the definition of it.
It's like in the definition.
Yeah.
And yet, by developing a certain set of tools or a certain mindset, how many of you feel like you can cultivate synchronicity in your life?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, you do?
Yeah. Eliana wanted to share that she's here because you're good at talking about this.
Thank you, sweetheart.
And
I do it a lot. What was the example the other day? The other day we were in line at Whole Foods, and Ellie asked me, she said, "Daddy, I want to buy one of those bags." And it was one of the green canvas bags that they sell for toting your food around. We already have like 30 of them. So I said, "Oh, I'm glad you want one of those. I'm not going to get you one, honey." She really wanted it. She pushed me here a little bit, and I finally said no. And we get to the cash register, and she does what she always does. What did you do with the cash register?
I asked the man if I could have some stickers, but he said he doesn't, but he said he has a mini bag.
She asked if she could have some stickers, which she does every time. Oh. And instead of a sticker, he reached in his drawer. He said, "I don't have any stickers, but I have this." He gave her a little tiny green bag that was like a miniature version of what she had asked
for.
And in that moment, I said, "Honey, you know that word I use all the time, synchronicity?
Wow.
That's what it means."
Thank you. Yeah.
So
cute. Wow.
So. Synchronicity. I always talk about some cautions around synchronicity, because it's if it were easy to cultivate synchronicity in our lives, our culture would probably be very different, I think. So why is it hard, and what are the things we need to take into consideration about the seriousness of synchronicity, the seriousness of a spiritual practice, if you want to call it that? And of course, there's scientific verification, and then closing there for me. So. Why do coincidences happen? I don't know that I have an answer for that. So the summary of how I see synchronicity working in the world is that your life is only fixed from your point of view. And there's some key principles in physics that actually back this up rigorously. One of them is called the single framework view, single framework principle, which essentially says, it says it in mathematical terms, but I'll interpret it for you in how I see it applying in the world, that in quantum mechanics it only makes sense to talk about a description of the world from one perspective at a time. How interesting is that? Mm-hmm. And what the reason that's true is because when you talk about the perspective of one, when I talk about things from my perspective, everything around me in the room right now is definite. It's certain. I mean, I know my guitar is sitting there and it's not vibrating, and I know that you're all here sitting with me and the books are in the back. And these are all the things that I'm going to accept as being definite or certain for me because I'm observing them. But what I can't say anything about is all the people outside this room. Say all the people from my work. I left work at 5:00, and all the people that I know we're doing something at that point are now uncertain from my point of view. Mm-hmm. Can you begin to wrap your mind around the idea that folks outside of this room are not actually definite or determined right now from their point of view? There's lots of different possibilities for people, for different states that people could be in. And in fact, if you try and argue with me about that, you can't really win because you don't have any information about them, right? So, I mean, if I were to call my friend Byron, who I left at work, you know, I could find out what he was doing right now, but I'd have to get information from him, right?
Right.
Without that information, I can't say anything for certain. I'm not saying he doesn't exist. I'm saying that he's in a realm of possibilities.
He might have feelings or knowings about when you think of him, something that's going on.
So, feelings and knowings, let's say that that's another way of gathering information about the world. And so, that is true. And without that information, it's a realm of possible states, realm of possibilities. And then if it's true that I'm able to gain sort of telepathic or subtle information about somebody without the normal modes of information, it's still a mode of gathering information, I would think. That's my guess. I don't know. But it's a very good point. And the question here is whether you have information about something or not. And if you do, then you can say that information tells you about the thing. And if you don't, you have to describe it as open to possibility. And so that's what this says. Anything you have not observed is not yet determined. Can you go one more? And so maybe it can fall into place in coincidental ways for your benefit. The moment we shift our worldview into away from being certain about things that we really are not certain about, like what people are doing outside of this room, when we shift away from that mentality, we realize things can maybe fall into place lots of different ways. What I thought was possible or impossible. I may be wrong about it. An example of this might be, I show up to the event tonight and I don't have the cable I need for the projector. And I'm worried the whole way here. I'm worried that I'm not going to, I forgot the cable for the projector. What am I going to do? But I've learned to settle down and think and start running through possibilities. Maybe I make a few phone calls. Maybe I just show up and the first thing I do is I ask. And more often than not, I find that things fall into place in coincidental ways for my benefit. And so that chord or that mic, someone's guitar or whatever it is that I'm needing from the world somehow appears through one of the people that I meet. And I call that fate follows free will. Fate follows free will. That, I think, contains the whole of what I'm speaking about tonight. That's the message of how synchronicity works in my perspective. It contains a lot. It says free will comes first, right? Because fate follows free will. And so it's saying that our free will, our initiative, is critically important in seeding the soil to get synchronicity in our lives. So I don't just show up wanting a cord for my computer but not saying anything about it and just waiting around. The first thing I would do is ask Stuart if he knows anybody. Or I would call Lisa, who actually loaned me the projector tonight, Lisa Bresci, very kindly. And I would ask, and I would seed the soil for my own synchronicities. And then I would trust. I would really trust at this point in my life that fate would follow from free will. It's happened so many times to me that's just something I flow with as much as possible. Elizabeth, did you have your hand up?
Oh, I was just looking at those two words. Free will to me means choice, making choices. Mm-hmm. Fate seem to be kind of nebulous. I mean, I don't really believe in fate necessarily. So I see what you're saying. You mean that because of the choices that you make, things happen.
Yes, exactly. And fate is, yes, it's kind of a loaded word, and you don't have to use fate. It's really that the things that seem fated, the things that fall into place in ways that make you go, was I meant to be here? This is like too well lined up for it to be an accident. That's what I mean by fate.
What about luck?
Luck?
Would you consider luck and fate to be similar?
Sure. If you could say luck follows free will, or that phrase, luck favors the prepared
mind.
Right. Right?
Chance
favors the prepared mind. Yeah.
Right.
So, yeah, fate is not the necessary word here. It's the idea that our initiative leads to favorable outcomes. And the real difference between that and the sort of modern mainstream worldview is that in the mainstream worldview, we tend to think that we just get lucky or we don't. And it really doesn't have a lot to... Well, that by being prepared, we're more likely to run into situation after situation that benefits us because we are ready for it. I'm saying pretty much the same thing, except that out of the blue, useful situations will arise simply because you made the effort. Simply because you took some free will choice that demonstrated a value or a goal that you were looking for. And from that effort, opportunities arose that wouldn't have arisen otherwise. Can we go forward? So keep going here. Keep going, please. keep going. Yeah, let's talk about quantum mechanics. So, this is a picture of Niels Bohr. And how many of you have read some quantum mechanics on your own for fun? Okay. It really is fun, but it's really a lifelong pursuit because it's so deep and interesting. And Niels Bohr was one of the founding people of quantum mechanics. And one of his professors asked him, well, if quantum mechanics says that an electron can be in a superposition of possibilities, in other words, it can maybe be here in this position, but also maybe be over here, have you heard about that idea that an electron can be in two places at once? It's not exactly right. It's not two places at once. It's two possibilities, neither of which is actually actualized. And that's essentially what he said. the person said, what does it mean for a particle to be in two places at once? And Niels said, to be, what does it mean to be? He got at the root of the problem, which is that our language only has words for something that is or something that isn't. That exists or does not exist.
Determined.
Yeah. Is indeterminate or is determinate. Yeah. And exactly what quantum mechanics says is that there's a thing called a wave function, you've probably heard of that, that represents possibilities. And if you square it, in other words, you multiply it by itself, then you get reality. You get is. But in between is not and is, there is this middle ground of the wave function, the possibilities. Mm-hmm. So you go from nothing, you have a wave function, which is just a possibility, and then you square it and you get something definite.
What do you mean by squaring it?
Squaring means multiplying it by itself. Or it's like you need two copies of this possibility space to create something real. It's essentially a mathematical formalism that leads to real predictions. Leads to real predictions, and what it shows us is that there's something underneath the definite measurements we make, or the definite outcomes we experience, that has some kind of reality to it. It has some kind of reality to it, but it's not definite reality. It's not determinate, as you said. It can lead to determinate outcomes, but the wave function in itself has some very strange properties, which can lead to strange outcomes as well. Go for it. So, the way I like to describe quantum superposition is in the following way. Oh, I'm going to just ask you, because I always forget, but I do have, at the end, I'll leave these by the door. If you can give me your feedback, I'll just leave them right here. I love getting feedback in my talks, so please fill those out. Quantum superposition is this idea that an electron, for instance, can be described in a superposition of possibilities. In other words, a combination of different possible states. And this is like saying my friend from work is no longer in a definite state from my point of view, because I left work and he's not there anymore either. So he's in a combination of different possibilities. The way I like to describe that so you can get some intuition of it is, imagine you're 16 and you have a curfew. And you were supposed to be home by 10 o'clock. And it's now midnight, and you haven't called your parents. And you're just remembering that you haven't called your parents as you drive up. So you get out of the car, you realize, oh no, I didn't call my parents. And you see the lights on, and they're never up past 10 o'clock. You see the lights on, so you start to get worried, and you walk up, and you open the door, and there's your mom or your dad sitting on the couch, waiting for you. Well, I'm going to describe your mom or your dad as a quantum superposition. Not really, but as a metaphor. Because they are in a superposition of possible feelings. Depending on how you measure them, you could get quite different results. So if you walk in and say, what's something you might say?
Oh, hi.
Oh, hi. Why are you awake? Yeah. I didn't think you'd be up anymore. My phone ran out of batteries, and so I didn't want to bother you, and it got too late, So mom's probably going to be pretty mad. Mm-hmm. Excuses. I did not need that. Thank you very much. Go right to your room. You're grounded for 2 weeks. So that's one possible measurement and one possible outcome. But there's another possible way you can measure a loving parent, assuming they're a loving parent, because they do love you. And if you said, I'm so sorry I kept you up. My phone ran out of batteries and I should have found another way to call you. And I feel really bad that you waited up this whole time. I promise it won't happen again. Well, there's not much mom can do. She'll say, yeah, it's frustrating. I'm so glad you're home safe. Right? Because she loves you. So glad you're home safe. Let's go to bed. So that's a different response. Same person, same situation. And it's as if me or you who are measuring mother is making a different choice of measurement. In a way, that's like the free will part, right?
Exactly.
And the fate follows from it. It follows from the choice we make. And so before we walk in the door, mom is in a quantum superposition. not really one, but it's a metaphor. She's in a superposition of feeling that could come out one way or the other depending on the way we choose to measure it. And that's exactly what physicists talk about when they say the system is in a superposition of states until I measure it, and the way I choose to measure it determines what kind of particular outcome I'm going to get. If I choose to measure the double slit experiment in a certain way, it'll appear as if there's particles shooting through those slits and bouncing off the screen. And if I choose to measure it in a different manner, it'll appear as if the things landing on the screen, I'm speaking about an experiment that many of you know, and I won't go into, but not everyone knows this, but if you choose to measure in a different way, you'll find it looks like a wave pattern on the screen. And this is just because you've chosen a different manner of measurement, different way to measure. Go for it, Stuart. So unmeasured, this is the real question, right? Unmeasured is what happens, that's the state mom is in before we walk in the door. And unmeasured, in our case, means undetermined. It's like mom's state before you walk in the door is undetermined. It's not yet determined which of mom you'll run into. And this is the picture of the two roads in the yellow wood. We're always faced with choices and faced with decisions. And before we make the choice, it's unmeasured and undetermined. And so it's not certain what type of outcomes we'll have down here or what outcomes we'll have down here. And the whole worrying about, you know, I've often thought about the question, if I walk out that door versus that door, will I run into my future partner? Or will I run into my future job? Or
yeah.
Will I have a fated outcome only if I go that door? But if I go the other door, I'm lost. You know?
Yeah.
Have you ever wondered if meaningless choices like that could be the ones that are really important in guiding your life?
Yeah.
Worried that you would just make the wrong choice?
Oh, gosh, yeah.
Yeah?
What about history?
Don't worry.
How do you mean?
Well, I mean, you know, you might take a certain path because history has shown you that that's probably a better way to go.
Mm-hmm.
You know, better paved path maybe rather than one that's full of potholes.
Yeah, so you can learn from your choices and your experiences, for sure, and make wiser decisions.
Mm-hmm.
And yet we never know which. So I think that is a very important point. We grow to become wiser in life. And at the same time, we never know what outcome will arise on one path or the other. But for instance, we can make choices that match our values. And that's where I think the wisdom comes in. Making choices that match our values. So key pieces of that are being conscious and knowing your values. Being conscious enough to know your values so you can actually act on them and then end up having synchronicities that match your values. And if you're not conscious about your values and you think you're looking for one thing, but you're behaving in a way that's looking for something else, and then you get the something else, you get the synchronicity that brings you to the something else, you start to feel like the world is against you and what's going on. So being aware and conscious of our values, and then acting on our values. I'll tell you a story. A question, yeah.
There's a difference between making a decision and participating in the making of the decision. And you can be playing more of a dominator role in the making of the decision, or you can be like constantly asking for guidance and looking around and asking for hints and clues,
yeah,
about what is the best course to take. So, I mean, because like when I've had my most dramatic experiences of synchronicity, it's been a sense of this collaboration. It's like the feeling that the whole cosmos was collaborating and creating this moment.
Sure.
Everything is involved. And so learning from those events has been about kind of like joining the conversation.
Mm-hmm. And so I think what I hear you asking is about where is the boundary or the balance between being assertive and being receptive.
Yeah.
And I think that's a really key question. When do we make decisions sort of more assertively, and when do we allow and flow with what's happening? I actually remember having a dream about this once and asking that question in the dream. And whether it was a guide or something in the dream that I asked it of, said, that's a very good question. And it led me to believe that that's really the art form of our lives, is learning how to navigate that question. So let me tell you a story. You know, I've been working, doing music and physics together for 5 or 6 or 7 years. At the same time, in the past 5 years, I've been doing a computer science job, which allows me to find balance between those two. And more recently, back maybe in January, I started to really reconsider, like, I really feel uncertain about how to take my music or my research to the next level. Should I go back to graduate school? Should I just leave my job and really dive into speaking as many places as I can? And I just kept an open mind, because in the past that might have freaked me out, like, what am I supposed to do here? But I just kept an openness, like, I will take whatever guidance seems appropriate and go with it. And more I started feeling like, well, maybe I need to leave my job. Well, all of a sudden, one day at work, I find out that my best friend at work, who happens to be the manager of the whole information systems team, is leaving.
Oh.
And of course I'm sad, and I was very sad, and it didn't occur to me what to do next. Except that a couple days later, the leader of the company, the CEO, walked up to me and just came to my desk quietly, said, I really wish you wanted this job, because it would make my life so much easier. And of course I felt really appreciated, but in the past I would have said, you know, I don't want to commit at that level. I'm not interested, and that's why she said it that way. But at this moment, everything had shifted at just the right way, and I considered why I hadn't wanted to move up previously in the company, and that had gone away. The reason for that had left. So suddenly, everything seemed to fall into place, and I thought, well, maybe we should talk about it. That's what I said there. Maybe we should talk about it. And so for the next couple of days, we talked about it, and I really did a lot of meditation and thinking about it. What do I want here? And what I came to was that this is an opportunity to build on stuff I've been doing for the past year, working with a mastermind group and learning that business is an environment or a medium in which that I really know very little about, and yet it's a wonderful environment to spread a message like this. And I didn't know how to do that, and I thought there was just no way I was ever going to do that. And suddenly I saw an opening that I could learn how to manage people and learn how to apply these principles in that kind of setting that I had never done before. Mm-hmm. And continue with my work. And so the open-mindedness led me to make that decision to take the job. And so it is about a balance in that story, a balance between assertiveness and receptiveness. If I had been certain about what direction my life was going, I never would have saw the opportunity as an opportunity that would benefit my own passion. I would have been certain that it was the wrong thing. Yeah.
And I kind of came into the conversation here, but you sure, talked yeah. about following values, your value system, and letting that attract what you wish to manifest. And then you talked about being open to the experience, and that maybe in that moment your value system changed. Okay, because you all of a sudden did what? I wasn't thinking about that. This is not to talk about myself, but I go through things. I go, well, all of a sudden I see something new that might not match my value system or what I thought. And then I'm thinking, well, maybe I'm supposed to be open to that. So to me, that's the crux. Where does that little kernel come in?
Yeah.
Where you know you're really supposed to be open, and where you're supposed to alter your traditional mindset or value around it. If that makes sense, what I'm saying.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And that is... So what I suggest, learn as much as you can about the dynamics of how synchronicity works. And that's what I'm studying when I talk about physics of synchronicity. Learn as much as you can about the mechanism, so that then you can develop the art form that you're talking about, which is, when do I
shift. Yeah.
And how do I... The hardest thing is to change expectations midstream, right?
Yeah.
I thought I was going this way, but now something really shocked me. I mean, when we talk about unexpected opportunities, that's a nice way of saying, unpleasant, unasked for changes.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, often that's what it is. And I think this is asking us to get really good at being in that space of not knowing this, so that rather than fighting the change that's happening, we can open to it and see the opportunities that are latent in it. So I think it's a very, very profound spiritual practice to do what you're talking about, which is to be in that space. I mean, that is the razor's edge of being alive, I think. Being in that space. And there's no trick or tool that I've ever learned that has helped other than being willing to be uncomfortable.
Mm. Yeah.
And there's no saying that it won't be full of certain challenges that aren't necessarily that pleasant.
Right. Right.
It's scary.
It's scary.
Yeah.
And death and life are in balance with each other, so every wonderful thing that happens to us is also a result of something else in our life dying away, or you know, these principles of balancing masculine and feminine, or balancing assertiveness and receptiveness, also the principles of the cycle of life and death, all of these come into play. And that's why, you know, if we talk about the cautions of synchronicity, it's not to think that synchronicity is just a way to get what you want. It's not just the law of attraction that you're going to attract what you think of. It's a much deeper process, I think, which with pitfalls in it. You know, there's ways you can kind of screw yourself up. And it takes a lot of presence of mind, like, to do what you're talking about, and being willing to be uncomfortable, being willing to go through things that are not so easy in order to get to some of what I think you were talking about, Elizabeth, your the dreams that the synchronicities can lead you towards, the opportunities that they lead you towards.
I was just thinking about careers, what you were just saying right now, how important it is to have this skill to be able to be flexible,
mm-hmm.
and to learn something new. It seems like in the old days, people had the same job forever, mm-hmm. you know, they worked for the same company forever, and so they had a lot of job security, and ever since the 90s, I would say, or maybe even before then, people have had to be more flexible. And some people look at people who have had many jobs as being, you know, not so good.
Yeah.
And another way it shows that they're great and adapted. So
yeah.
I think that's what you're saying is we have to be more flexible in this economy. It's just a different world.
It is.
And if you latch on to something that the world wants, and usually it's a technical skill,
mm-hmm.
you can go places.
Uh-huh. Well, I think that with the invention of the internet and the development of this global brain that we're all participating in, we are absolutely being challenged to live in more uncertainty. Our jobs are changing more frequently.
Mm-hmm.
Everything is changing more quickly. And I think it's a line in the Tao Te Ching that says the primary mistake is to defend yourself. The most fundamental mistake is to prepare to defend yourself. Not that defending yourself is bad, that's not what it's saying. It's to prepare to defend yourself. It's to think that things are going to go badly, and so I'm going to
be defensive.
I'm going to dig in. I'm going to hold on to this job with my life. I'm going to assume that you're going to say something that is intended to hurt me, and I'm going to defend myself right away. So I think this economy and this network, you know, the internet and all of our modern life is asking us to be more open and more interconnected, and mm-hmm. so that's why all of this is so important. So I have a song for that. I'm gonna live. I'm gonna do what it takes to let go, and I'm gonna take my seat, let love run the show. Everything that I look at,
I get attached. But I'm not gonna give weight to the wounds of my past. When it's me that will lose if I choose to resent what I have. I'm gonna live in love. I'm gonna do what it takes to let go. And I'm gonna take my seat and let love run the show. Everything that I look at, I get sucked in. I'm already miles beyond it by the time I begin. And the details of the moment are already the past. But since I've got another chance, well, I'm gonna live in love. I'm gonna do what it takes to let go. And I'm gonna take my seat and let love run the show. Yeah, I'm gonna hold your heart. Anything that I know, and I'm gonna take my seat, let love run the show. I'm gonna take my seat and let love run the show.
Timelessness. So let's go through the physics of timelessness in five steps. And then I'm not going to show the videos tonight because they're available online. You can go home and watch them. They're on my website, skynelson.com. So we'll just save time by skipping those. But special relativity plus quantum mechanics equals relationality. That's the core of this piece of physics. Go for it, Stuart. So first of all, light is timeless. So what I'll say in lieu of the video is that in special relativity, what special relativity does is it questions and changes our view of space and time. And there's a well-known principle called time dilation. Have any of you heard of that? When one observer, one person, is moving very, very quickly relative to another person, they'll measure different rates of time. Time will pass more slowly for the individual who's moving when they look around them. And it turns out that as you get closer and closer to the speed of light, that time will slow down more and more and more. And you can never actually reach the speed of light because time slows down all the way. It's a limit. It's a limit. A limit. A speed limit. So with those bumper stickers that say the universal speed limit is what they're talking about. So nothing can go up to the speed of light or beyond it because everything, time stops. But what hasn't really been examined because, I don't know why, but it's been there in the theory since it was invented 100 years ago, is that light itself is going to the speed of light. Light itself is timeless. And it's a very interesting dilemma. I speak about this with physics colleagues, and it's very hard to convince them that you're allowed to say that statement, because we're taught from the minute we enter college that no object can go the speed of light, so you don't even have to ask that question. Time can never slow down all the way, because nothing can ever go all the way to the speed of light. But there's one thing that goes the speed of light, light. Mm-hmm. So what is light experiencing? I mean, and that's where I get into all sorts of trouble. I start saying light is experiencing something, and the physicist will say, well, light doesn't experience anything. It's a very difficult conversation to have. Because I'm convinced that even if light does not have a brain or a consciousness, which I think it probably does have a consciousness, but let's not go there. I'm not going to go there with a physicist. It still interacts with things in the world. Light leaves that light bulb, bounces off the prayer flag, and goes to your eye. Those are three distinct steps. One, two, three. And from your perspective, they happen in a certain order. They leave the light first, it hits the red prayer flag and changes, right? And then gets to your eye. But from light's point of view, there's no time. Mm-hmm. There's no time between those steps. Those are, and then I start to say that they're simultaneous, but they're not. Time is out of the picture completely. So these three separate events, from your point of view, are not separate for light. And how is that possible? Because one thing is causing the other. The light bulb is causing the flag to be illuminated and causing your eye to see it. There's an order there. Mm-hmm. All of our ideas of causality are wrapped up in that. And when you say that light is timeless, that has really strange implications for this whole notion of causality. Light is not only timeless, it's spaceless. Space shrinks down all the way to nothingness, or whatever you want to call it. Mm-hmm. And so light not only has nowhere to go, it has no time to do it in. And so whereas we see light taking a certain amount of time to go boom, boom, boom at the speed of light, from light's reference frame, if you want to say that, that's not exactly what's happening, because there is no space and time. I'll just show you some math to impress you, okay? This is Lorentz's equation, a famous equation from 1905. And it turns out that if you say something's going the actual speed of light, you call beta equals 1. That's just the velocity of the light, or the speed of the light, of the object over the speed of light. And if the speed of the object is the same as the speed of light, it's like dividing 10 by 10, it comes out to be 1. So that's what beta equals. Beta is just relative. It's indicating your speed. And this is the speed of an object going the maximum speed of light. And if you plug in beta into here, you find that this value, delta t prime, equals 0. What do you think delta t prime equals? Represents? Anybody catch on?
Experience time.
Experience time by the light.
Well, by whoever's moving.
Right, by whoever's moving, exactly. And so this is the time as measured by the person that's moving, or the light if it's in this case. And this is the time as measured by me, sitting here talking to you. Hmm. So I measure a certain amount of time, but the light measures zero time, no matter what I measure here. This could be a split second, or it could be the 8 minutes it takes from light to travel from the sun to the earth. It would still lead to delta t prime equals 0 for the light.
Yeah.
No time, the timelessness.
You process things differently.
Well, and it could also be for the amount of time it takes. I could say it took 10 million years for light to get across from one galaxy to another. For light, still comes to 0. So, one more slide, please. So the time experienced by light is 0. How can light be timeless when we see it moving all the time? We measure it. We have great experiments that show exactly how fast it's moving. And those are all accurate. They're not wrong. The question is, what is happening from light's perspective? One more. So I'm going to twist your mind just a little bit. And this is the conclusion, what I think is really interesting. If what we said is that the light's perspective says that time passes equal to 0. In other words, light experiences timelessness. If you plug that back into the Lorentz equation, it comes out to be t equals L over c. Now, you're not probably as familiar as I am with just moving things around here, but you can move the c over here, you can move the t down there, and what you get is essentially a speed equation. It's like if your car was going 10 miles in 60 minutes, it would be going 10 over 60 equals, what is that, 10 miles an hour, right? And that would be your speed. And that's what this is saying. This is essentially saying that whenever we measure light, it seems to be traveling at a very specific speed, the speed of light. That's just very simple right there. It's saying light is always traveling at the speed of light whenever we measure it. But whenever we're not measuring it, or from its own perspective, from its own perspective, it's the, it, this is what's true. There's timelessness. But from everyone else's perspective, it's just a regular old thing moving through space at a certain speed.
It's a theory, though. It's an assumption, because you can never really measure it, right?
I can measure this really well.
Yeah, but that one above, like time equals
right.
zero, you can't measure that.
It's
an assumption.
You're right. I don't know that I call it an assumption, but you're essentially right. You can't measure it, but if there are implications from that and you could measure those, that would be interesting. Mm-hmm. And that's what we have to do in physics is, if something's not directly measurable, because I can't be light,
yeah.
then I need to figure out what does this imply about other things that I could measure?
Mm-hmm.
What are some different predictions that I could make that we could then measure? Yeah.
I like saying that when you speak a linear sentence, you're always older at the end of the sentence than you were at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
But if you speak a circular sentence, then you don't age at all.
Mm-hmm.
And you can get younger.
Uh-huh.
I think language is actually part of the problem. And that if you try understanding it with conceptual language, say Seiji Noita, a Japanese utopian philosopher, said once that the utopian jumps over social barriers in order to address them, so to speak, from the other side.
Mm-hmm.
So it can't be resolved in the conceptual realm.
That's right. So I want to stay on it.
There's a non-conceptual realm.
So it does challenge us to see with a little bit more than just our intellectual mind. And I want to get to a little bit... Well, no, we're doing well. We're balancing, I think. We're talking about the human aspect of synchronicity in the beginning. Now we're talking about some of the intellectual pieces that I think support that. Can you go one step further? So light is timeless. Light is spaceless. There's no ordering of events to light. The light leaving the bulb, hitting the flag, coming to your eye. From light's perspective, there's no ordering. But the question I ask of you is, if all those events are not ordered from light's perspective, how does it know where it's going to go?
It doesn't matter.
It's everywhere.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
But you observe.
So what this leads to in my mind is that every possibility is available to the light. And it's only when I actually measure one possibility that particular one happens. But in order for the light to be able to be timeless, be everywhere, and also travel through this very directed 1-2-3 process, it has to be able to be in many possibilities, only one of which becomes actual. Can you go forward until we get to the right slide? Keep going. These are all from the video, so we can skip it for now. Keep going. This, okay. So light leaving the sun. Here's the sun. And here's a light particle that leaves the sun and is timeless. If you look at it from the timeless realm, a timeless perspective, all of these possibilities are open to it. It's connected. It's not only here, it's also over here at the same time. It's at the beginning and at the end of its journey at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And so how can it know where it's supposed to be unless it just has all the possibilities available to it?
Mm-hmm.
And here's all the possibilities. It branches out, hits a dust particle here, hits another particle there, bounces this way. These are all the different possible paths it could take. And it's only when a human being, or and this isn't actually certain, what causes the collapse into a certain state, but maybe it's a human being that observes it on Earth, I would actually say it's you. It's only when you actually observe it that from your perspective, this happens. Go. One particular path falls into place, and all the other paths disappear as if they never were. All these other possibilities disappear. What you might notice about this diagram is that it wasn't until this point, 8 minutes later, that the thing that happened back here, maybe a minute into its journey, actually became definite. It wasn't until all these 8 minutes had gone by and one particular reality happened that the entire retroactive path of the light became definite. Do you see the point I'm trying to get across there? There's a retroactive effect. Things are not yet determined all the way through 8 minutes of time for this flight until the end of the journey when we measure it and all of that falls into place in a very specific way. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Is there reciprocity in the field that we're creating of that collapse of the lady?
You say it a little bit louder.
I'm going back to the thing about values and maybe the way it collapses as it's oriented reciprocally with some energetic value system that you may have, say, for your job. What happened was holding a larger container of your desire to bring this into the field of business. Mm-hmm. I mean, so there was an underlying value, and did the events collapse or the wave collapse with also some other participation from the larger field?
I think the challenge with the larger field idea, and I'm happy you brought that word up because it's used a lot and in modern discussions. I think what's really important about this model is it leads to an idea of relationality. And so the idea of any kind of definite objective field or definite objective reality is not what we say tenable. Doesn't apply. That this leads to the idea that you can't say that there's, you know, we like to think of a field in space as, you know, actual electric fields traveling through space, carrying radio waves, carrying TV signals, whatever it may be. We're very familiar with that concept, and yet we still think of it as a definite thing. A field. We think of a field as a thing. And what this is saying is that that thing is only definite relative to your perspective. Relative to your perspective, for you. Mm-hmm. And for you, it's relative to your perspective. And so a synchronicity, I'll just take it a step further, a synchronicity is only meaningful from your perspective. This is back to the single framework rule. It's only, you can only take one perspective at a time, and that's where the synchronicities happen. This becomes a very sort of spiritual discussion because it's really about you and what does this mean for you. And this particular, I use the example of my book. I have a book, by the way, that I finished that is not yet published, but I do have a few copies here for sale if you'd like. I didn't actually tell you that, Robin Stewart, but you can, I hope that's okay. Where was I going with that?
That it's relative to our personal perspective.
Yes, and I was going to tell a story from the book, and then I told a different story, which is that I have the book. So it's relative to our perspective. And I like to say, you know, imagine you're traveling across town. People like to think that I can control a stoplight, for instance. I've got a lot of need. I'm going to use synchronicity to collapse the stoplight in my favor.
Oh my God.
I'm going to turn it green because I have to get across town really quickly.
Uh-huh.
And then people use that as an argument saying this could never be true because then the person with the stronger willpower is somehow controlling the traffic lights in the city. And this, all these crazy conversations stem from the idea that there's an objective world out there that you're controlling.
Oh, hey, I'm going to get a parking space. That works every time.
That's it. It's the parking space.
Yeah, there's
fairy,
a parking,
right?
Space. Absolutely. Karma, right.
So the question is, are you stealing that good parking space from someone else? Or are you forcing that traffic light to be green so that someone else is late for their meeting? Who's coming the other way? And I would say no. I would say neither of those is true because what's happening is some greater, now, and I'll come back to the field here. The field, in my view, is a greater, I say, fifth dimensional version of reality, which includes all the possibilities.
Mm-hmm.
So if our four dimensional world is this right now, space and time, the fifth dimensional reality includes all the various versions of this that could be real.
Mm-hmm.
And the one that's collapsing for me right now is just the one that's collapsing for me, and you happen to be part of it. And you also have one that's collapsing for you right now, and I happen to be part of that.
That's a coincidence.
and there's another key piece in quantum theory that says, it's called consistent histories, quantum theory. Consistent is the important word there.
that when I have a description of something that you're also observing, our agreement, our descriptions will be consistent with each other. Other than that, there's no requirements. So the way that things actually fall into place is not yet determined. But when they fall into place, you and I will always agree on how they fall into place.
Not necessarily.
Well, and there's reasons why you might not, but they have more to do with maybe a deeper level.
Perspective.
With perspective. And what I'm suggesting is just from the top level of physics that you and I are going to agree on the state of my guitar because we're both observing it right now.
But what about different perceptions of seeing the same thing?
Yeah. So you may have different perceptions.
Well, you may not agree.
Well, certainly if somebody says something, you might interpret it differently. Or we may say the color of my shirt is different. Or one person may think they saw a person go that way with red hair, and someone else said, no, that was someone with brown hair. And that gets a little more subtle, and I don't know how to answer that.
Video cameras definitely help reality.
So, but that's a great point, because another way I describe this is that if you take a video camera, you think that you're collapsing reality, right? I'm going to put a video camera in here and walk out the door, and then I can be certain that everything that happens in here is definite, because the video camera is capturing it in reality. But what really happens, according to this theory, is that not only the room, but also the camera are in a superposition of possibilities.
Somebody has to interpret the data on the video, though.
Well, it's not until I go back later and watch the video that the things that happen in here become definite. So anything that interacts enters into a joint superposition, almost like a joint delusion, right? and so it's a flaw to think that in modern physics, it's often thought that you can have a camera or just the environment in general is causing these quantum superpositions to go away. We think that quantum mechanics doesn't apply much in the world because we think we don't see it. But quantum mechanics isn't about what we see, it's about what happens before we see it. And that means we have to look at what were you doing before I observed you. I can't answer that question. And the video camera can't answer that question either until I look at it later. And so just to say one more thing, that's the retroactive part. I can always look at a video camera to tell what was going on, but then I'm collapsing it back here. So then I'm looking at what was going on, but can you go back one slide? Up arrow. But that doesn't mean that when this was actually happening that it was definite. It means that when I look at it afterwards, it's now retroactively appearing to have been definite.
Isn't that like the story of humanity? And their progression into a great love affair, suddenly all the steps that happened in the synchronicity of meeting somebody whom they didn't know would necessarily be, but somehow their significance grows farther, the 8 minutes out suddenly distills all those snapshots lead to isn't that our story? Isn't that where story comes from, kind of? The distillation of all those snapshots that equal that outcome for that person's personal story.
That's well put. And there's a very valid question in modern cosmology, physics, that says, was the Big Bang not even real until you or some conscious human being observed the world and therefore retroactively made it all possible or made it all real by observing it? That question is actually entertained in cosmology. And that's a version of this. It's not exactly the version I subscribe to myself, but that's sort of what this is saying.
In some way.
So we already talked about retroactive event determination. We can go past these slides. We're going to wrap up pretty shortly here. Keep going. I'm not going to tell the story. You can hear this another time. Keep going fast. This is a good story. This is the first chapter of my book. Okay. Keep going. I'm working more out of synchronicity. So I put in the title of the talk, is the universe a friendly place? That was a question Einstein asked. He said, the most important question we can ask is the universe a friendly place? What do you think?
Yeah.
if you're ready for it, if you're prepared.
It all depends on your perspective.
I have a science book at home that has endless pictures of the universe, and the whole perspective of that book is the violence in the universe.
That's a perspective, right?
Yeah.
Interesting. So, I think some of us are in agreement here. Let's see what it says. It depends. It's a mirror to us.
Mm-hmm.
So, synchronicity is not simply something that brings you what you want when you want it. Synchronicity is something that reflects to you who you are. And so the question becomes, are you a friendly place? Am I a friendly place? Am I bringing friendliness into this world? What I'm trying to show now in my current work is that not only is the world falling into place around our actions, like I think I've shown here, but that it falls into place in alignment with the actions we take. And that we can actually say that our actions have some kind of meaning to them, and the opportunities that come from those actions are meaningful. So when I didn't actually tell you this, but when I, in January, started having these questions about my work, I was also not booking a lot of gigs at that time. I was pulling back, and I was demonstrating to the universe that I wasn't heading in that direction at that moment. And that was, in this view, those were actions I took that demonstrated a certain meaning, that I was committed to this path with my job, and the universe gave me exactly what I asked for. I wasn't asking for more gigs, I was actually asking for more responsibility at my job. And it gave me something wonderful, which was in alignment with what I had asked for. And the part of me that still wanted to have more gigs was a little bit like, I didn't really want that.
Right.
But it's what my actions have demonstrated. And so I felt like it was a just outcome to what I had demonstrated. And so that's why I say it's a mirror to us. That opportunity that arose was a mirror both to the positive influence I had had at work and why they thought I was a good choice, but it was also a mirror to my not choosing to be very aggressive with my music career at that time. And so it could be seen as a positive or a negative thing, depending if you want to take that view, but it was a reflection. Do I have time for one more song, Stuart and Rob,
mm-hmm.
and then we'll close?
Always good to end with a song.
What's that?
Always good to end with a song.
Always good to end with your heart. So I have a CD that I brought with me, that every song I've played so far is on that CD. This song is not, this is a newer song, but I do have it recorded, so if you buy my CD tonight, I'd be happy to send you this song as well. And this song came out of a dream, and in the dream, I was standing on a cliff overlooking the world, and there was a lot of chaos, a lot of trauma, difficulty and challenge and change going on down below. But the feeling in me at that time was, nobody can make me scared. Nobody can make me worried. Nobody can make me feel like I have no say in what's going on around. In fact, I can stand up with my full inner positive attitude. And I just stepped off that cliff and I started walking up into the air over it all. By the very strength of the will of my attitude, my intention, and this song was in that moment. I'm not held back by anybody's view of me. I'm not held back by thoughts of insecurity. I'm not held back by opinions that I don't believe. And I will fight the things I see. I won't give up. I won't back down. I'll take it on. I'm not
I'm not held back. I won't give up when I see impossibilities, not constrained by the limitations of the sea. I've got more strength than the problems that are thrown at me. I will not accept defeat. I won't give up. I won't back down. I'll take it all. I'm not held back. This is my day. I'm not held back. Brush fear away. Still not held back. I'll give it everything I have. No one else can tell me who I am. I won't give up. I won't back down. I'll take it on. I'm not held back. I'm not held back. I'll take it home. Cause in my love, I'm not held
back. Thank you so much on behalf of Many Rivers Books and Tea. That was wonderful. Very much appreciated. It is my pleasure to remind people that there is a donation bowl over on the counter, and we gratefully receive gifts and share those gifts with our speakers to further their work and to help maintain this space for further such events. The bowl's right over there. Next to the bowl, Sky left his questionnaire, and I left a pen there too,
Thank you.
You can take a look at that. Turn this light back on, because Jim has put out a few little things like the power of coincidence and other things possibly relevant to the topic tonight.
Dave Rico.
Yes, and I know Sky has his stuff over there. And so I want to thank you all for coming out tonight. No coincidence, we're all here together. And thanks again to Sky.
Many of you are already on my email list, but if you're not, feel free to leave your email on one of the forums and I'll happily add you to it.